but
Okay. So I think the biggest thing from my mom, she hasn't necessarily even like sat me down and talked about it, but just watching her live her life, was that no challenge is too big. I think we all know that life throws its challenges and obstacles and curveballs, and not even necessarily they're all bad, but just stuff that we don't always expect and not we aren't necessarily prepared for. But watching my mom go through countless of these and watching her just embrace them and use them to learn from and just trusting God and going with it and using them to strengthen her and her abilities to care for all of us and my family. So someone in my state of just about to go to college and be an adult, it's a really comforting thing to know that I can take on any challenge that comes my way relying on Christ.
You'll be the first one going to college in the family line, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, just for people who don't know, I know your home is generally a pretty quiet place, so kind of just lay out what your home looks like just to help people.
Okay. So I'm the oldest of my mom's five children. I have a brother, Elijah. He's 17. Then my sister, Ariella, is 7. Ellie is 5. And Talia is 4.
And they're great singers, by the way. So, okay, we talked about what you've learned, but what have you admired about motherhood, especially if you've seen it through the eyes of your mom?
Yeah, definitely. I admire my mother's strength and just her sacrificial heart. Being able to see my mother and how she parents me, my teenage brother, and then my three little sisters, it's been really cool because I kind of get to see it start from the beginning almost with my little sisters. And it's hard. It's a really hard job. It's hard for me, and I'm not even their mom. But, yeah, just seeing how she continues to go on every day, just giving of herself to me, my siblings, my father, her family. So, yeah, just her sacrificial heart and her strength carrying on every day.
So we know that family is a challenge for many people, old or young. Whatever stereotype we might have thought family looks like, it probably doesn't. And especially for a lot of young people that sometimes have a hard time talking about family.
Yeah.
And we can judge the book by the cover and miss what's going on inside. Mm-hmm. What would you speak to some of the younger folks here in terms of how to deal with some family issues and the importance of maybe faith or the church in doing that?
So for the young people, not even necessarily young people, just everyone who has their mother in general, but especially young people, because I think we don't always tend to express ourselves in the best way. But I think two really important things to remember considering your mother is that, one, she's human. She's going to make mistakes, and she goes through the challenges that, same as us, we tend to think, oh, you know, they don't understand me. But they have walked in our shoes, and they get it. And they have their own personal needs, but they're just consistently giving them this of themselves to us. And then the second thing that I think it's important to remember that I can't even fully speak on this from experience because I'm obviously not a mom, but just the relationship between a mother and her child is something so special. I think it's one of the most pure and genuine and like unconditional loves that we have here on earth. And I think especially just me, myself, I tend to forget that. And so I know that because of that, my mother's not going to steer me wrong. And she's not just there to give me advice when I don't want it and stuff like that. But yeah, I think if you recognize that, you just create just so much more appreciation and understanding of your mother and the church coming alongside of you in doing that and expressing your love and care for the moms, I think is really important.
So the last two of the last 3 weeks, we've had the privilege to perform weddings, Mike and Ann, and yesterday Brent and Sharon, and we were in some palatial churches, amazing churches with great people. But as I thought about it, I wouldn't change this place for the world. and the richness of the people in here, and to be able to see somebody like Aliana and many of you grow up from almost a little baby to the place now where she's be heading. Well, you're going where next year?
I'll be attending the School of Visual Arts in New York.
You wonder where that influence came from, right? But she's going to be pursuing a degree in what?
Photography and video.
Photography, and she's going to be doing the photography next week at the groundbreaking ceremony.
That's right.
You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, any final remarks you just want to share from your heart to your family?
Yeah. I would just encourage the moms out there, just that your work isn't going to waste. I know it's hard. I see it every day, the things that being a mom just entails, but we do recognize it, regardless if you think your child has realized it or not. I think deep down, all of us know that your work isn't going to waste. It's so worth it, and it does hit us at the times when we really, really need it. Sometimes it's too late. Sometimes we should have recognized it a long time ago, but it's all for a great cause, and you all are doing a great job. And for the kids, I would just encourage us as teens to make an effort to express to your parents how much they do mean to you and how much work they put in and all the care that they have for you. And to my mom, I would just like to say thank you. I definitely feel so prepared as just a woman becoming an adult. I feel ready to take on the world. My dad asked me a little bit ago if I was scared about going to college. And I told him, I'm not scared about going to college. I'm scared about becoming an adult and leaving my family. And one of the biggest things is leaving my mom, because she is my best friend and my go-to. So, but I know that I'll be calling her all the time and bothering her and whatnot. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Love you.
Monsieur Johanna, if they give you trouble, I've got 6 years of French under my belt. Just call me, okay? We'll take care of them. All right, second person I like to call up. I called it a honeymoon surprise. I had the privilege to do most of our Skyping or most of our premarital training through Skype because Dr. Miller was here laboring in the bowels of Metro Hospital while his soon-to-be fiancée was serving at a medical clinic in Nicaragua. And we're so glad that they became one, and we're so glad that for these last almost 18 months that they've been able to be a part of us as family. When she found out that Cleveland, Ohio, ugh, I don't know where it is, but it sounds cold. It is. But Susanna, would you please come forward? Welcome, Susanna Miller. Well, just give us a little background of the last 18 months in your life.
roller coaster. Brian came down to Nicaragua to work with a friend of his who's a Nicaraguan doctor. And that doctor didn't have enough work for him, so he pawned him off on me, told him to come work in my clinic.
So when we're talking about our medical ministry, our missions ministry, Brian emailed quickly and said, there is a value in short-term missions. And sometimes you get more than you thought. But what did you do there, and how long?
In Nicaragua.
In Nicaragua, right.
I'm a registered nurse, so I worked in medical missions there for 13 years.
13 years.
Doing a lot of different things. I worked with a renutrition center for malnourished children, with an orphanage, with one of the public hospitals, and then eventually went into a community where there was no health care and started a health clinic there.
Chemistry moved quickly in this relationship, and I won't tell you about that. It was all good, though. And then they finally got married when?
February 4th of last year.
Last year, February 4th. And as best as we know, conceived when?
The next week.
Family planning at its finest. Okay. So God bless you with a wonderful son whose name is?
Samuel Virgil.
Brian, would you hold Samuel up to God?
He's semi-asleep,
right.
Thankfully.
Is he sleeping? Yeah, all right. So you became a mother. You became a wife, a mother really quick, and a citizen.
Of the United States again.
Yeah, right. Okay. So what has been your greatest joy and greatest tension or challenge of being a new mom?
I think the greatest joy has been watching him discover a whole new world and learn to delight in the people around him. I love watching him when Brian comes home. He just lights up, and suddenly mom doesn't exist anymore. His favorite person just walked into the room, or coming to church Sunday mornings, and watching him reach out and pet Ranisa's face, or, you know, he knows people and he loves them, and that makes me happy. It really blesses me to see that. And as far as the greatest tension, for me it's twofold. One is that sense of always being on duty. When I was in Nicaragua, it didn't matter how hard the day was, you could go home to your house at the end of the day, stretch out in the hammock with a lemonade or a margarita if it was a really bad day, and you were done. You were off the clock. And I'm discovering, I am a new mom, but I am discovering that that doesn't happen with when you're a mom. You know, you're always, when you get to the end of the day, the night shift starts, which is a beautiful thing, but at the same time, it can be very wearing to give. I'm responsible before God for this young man, and God has entrusted his heart to me to shepherd alongside his father and to model the love of God and the gospel to him. And that's a scary thought, because I don't know about you, but I can't be 100%. I can't always be patient and loving and kind. And that to me is the pressure of being a mom, feeling like I want to give my absolute best for him, and I can't always be at my best.
Okay.
Is that?
So for those who aren't certain, Margarita is Spanish for Margaret, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so... Tell us a little bit about the parental training you got far before you were married, and how has that come to help you now, if it has?
I'm the oldest of 13 children, so my mom is a saint. she homeschooled us all. She raised us alongside my dad. I have amazing, godly parents. So I got to help raise, you know, in the practical part of raising children, but I also had the model of an incredible mother who lived out the gospel, lived out that sacrificial love in giving up. She was 18 when she married my dad, and so she gave up any idea of career or whatever, and she dedicated herself entirely to us. And there were a lot of people who looked down on her for that choice. That she had put her life on hold and, you know, she was doing less or whatever. But mom really showed me, and it's something that I'm still trying to put into practice in my own life, but that changing dirty diapers and wiping snotty noses for Jesus was just as valuable as anything else. You know, it looks romantic when it's true. You know, it looks romantic and exciting when you see someone serving children in a third world, feeding children or doing whatever, and those are necessary things, and we need to do it. But one thing I'm still trying to reconcile in my own heart and mind and really put into practice is it's just as valuable, and it's even more valuable with this child, because this is the one that God has given me. And mom taught me that.
Okay. So you left Nicaragua, which I presume you had a family sense there, community, for sure. Yeah. Your family's in South Carolina, Florida, so that's a little bit away. Brian has family fairly close, but still not that close, and long working hours sometimes. What role does church play? You're going to be leaving us pretty soon. We hate to say that, but what role has church played or can play in helping someone who's new to the area, let alone newly married and newly mama?
For me, Scranton was huge in that. And not so much the Sunday morning. Sunday morning is great. I love it. But what really made the difference for me was the Tuesday morning group, a small group that embraced me as family. They saw me not as just another face here in the pew on Sunday morning, but they saw a young woman in a new city who didn't know anyone, who's suddenly pregnant and married and everything else, and real friendships were formed. There were people who learned my name and would ask about me, ask about Brian. Planning a baby shower for someone you've just met. They delight in Samuel. When I walk in the door, I don't have to hold him anymore. Suddenly there's a line of people waiting to hold him. You know, and that, it makes you a real person and you connect with real people who share real life. Having other moms, Janice, that shared her struggles after delivery, Holly and Sheila and so many others who've been very real with me that motherhood isn't all roses and you know, bubbles and unicorns, and basically give me permission to be real in return. It lets me be vulnerable and share when I'm struggling, and it gives me the support I need when my mom isn't here to listen, you know, because we can go and cry honestly to mom, and she's not going to judge us, right? And when mom's not there, you need other people to fill that role. And especially the women of Tuesday morning and the moms I've named have been that for me.
And you guys are headed where and when?
We're headed to Cincinnati the very beginning of July, very soon.
And Brian,
we are
going to
miss you
Brian
guys terribly.
Doing what?
Brian is doing a fellowship in emergency medicine, which is amazing.
Well, thank you for being a part of our family. A hoodie with earphones constantly on, walked into our midst, and he's going to tell a little bit of his story today. So welcome Jamil Patrick, if you would. Jamil. Man, you got me already. Okay, tell us a little bit about what your family looked like when you were about 8 years old or so. Who was all home? And
when I was 8 years old, I was on the east side. It was me, my mother, father, two sisters, her four kids at that time, her four kids and her abusive husband at that time. At that time, my father, he was home, but he was on drugs, so he sort of wasn't home.
Okay, so we have people at home. Okay.
Yes, people.
People. Okay. And then things started changing not long after that. Could you explain what started to happen to your household?
When I was 13, we moved away from my father because things got crazy. So it was me, my sister, and my mother. And then not long after that is when my mother got cancer.
And she?
My mother passed away when I was 17.
17. And that's about a time, and where your father was at that time as well?
My father was at a halfway home trying to get clean at that time.
Okay, so we went from a lot of people in the home, part of it somewhat normal, part of it a little abnormal, but now you're down to just you and your sisters, right? Your two sisters?
Right, and my father's around.
And your father. Okay. So how did you get hooked up to this place?
Well, when I was in at the school over here, I was in a class with a guy named CW that some of you may know. I found him very annoying at the time. Yeah, he had a very high school voice, and he did the morning announcements. Like, hi, this is CW. It's like, shut up. But somehow we stayed connected somehow, and when I was in high school, he kept inviting me to come to his youth group, which I didn't because it was on Thursdays, and wrestling came on Thursdays, so I said no. But I finally came, and I've been stuck ever since.
Okay. So mentioning CW and two of his friends are leaving Wednesday to do 2 weeks of ministry in Poland, and I don't mean Poland, Ohio. When he got that assignment, CW said, are there any blacks in Poland? I said, well, you're going to find out. So But pray for them if you would, please. But you came and literally you had the hoodie on, you had earplugs on, didn't talk to a whole lot of people. What was going on inside as you started to emerge with a strange community here?
Well, I think at that time, I wasn't saved when I first came here. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of music that they say wasn't godly. So then that was being mixed up with the new biblical lessons that I was learning. So it's just a whole mix of everything, and I was still on drugs at the time, so it was still... I later learned it was God working in my heart later, but it was still like at the time, I was like, okay, what's going on? And I was never a people person. Sometimes I'm still not, honestly. So at that time, yeah. So at that time, even though I came here, I was like, I really don't want to look at anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Okay.
And then when I first came here, there was some friendly person at the door. She's like, hi, how are you doing? I'm like, why are you talking to me?
You notice she's in that rap mode really quick, ready to go here. Okay, so we oftentimes don't talk about these things, but what was it like losing your mom at a young age, and what void did you feel in your heart?
Well, at that time, you know, you feel, you know, what any normal person would feel. You're sad. You feel like, you know, she's not going to see a lot of things. You know, she didn't see me graduate, didn't see me get my first job, you know. I'm single, but if I find an unlucky person, she will not be at the wedding, obviously. Yep, so I've been on my own since I was, you know, 19, so I had a, you know, because after she passed away, I moved with my sister, but she was married with kids, so I had to leave her house, you know, pretty quick. So I was thrown into the real world kind of fast, so I didn't learn a lot of things like how to manage finances and how to do taxes and everything. And then I later found out the school told her I had ADHD, but she couldn't tell me because she passed away. So I didn't find out until like 4 years ago, which I was like, that could have saved me so much trouble if I would have known, but she couldn't tell me.
Okay, just to maybe follow up a little bit on a question I asked Susanna. How did church help you fill that void, and what maybe could it have done better?
Well, I lived with you for about 4 months.
Most!
You,
that's good.
You sacrificed your food. I appreciate that. Okay, real quick, sorry. One time, I came home after work, and Debbie asked, are you hungry? Sure. So she gave leftovers for something, and I guess it was his favorite dish, whatever it was, or something he wanted. So he came home, and he said, Debbie, where's the whatever? She said, I gave it to Jamil, and he looked at her like...
Good.
I think he's going to turn into the Hulk. We better run. But... You know, at the time, as you said, I had a hoodie on and, you know, I wasn't very approachable. So I didn't make it easy for people to easily approach me. But I think what helped me out the most was having biblical teaching, because my family grew to a point where they were depressed and they turned to other substances. But you guys helped me to turn to God the correct way.
Okay, good. Thank you. Now, to piggyback a little bit off Aliana, you've worked with young people since pretty much you graduated here. You work at the church in Lakewood, kids this size, high school kids, right across the board. And you know, sometimes folks that go through life with some of the challenges you felt don't like to talk about it, walk around sometimes tough or with a hoodie on or whatever. How would you encourage our young people that are struggling with issues at home without, you know, necessarily breaking down confidentiality? How would you encourage them to get rid of some of that pain that might be coming from home that they carry? And what can we do to help?
If you know one person you can trust, tell them. Because sometimes we trust one person, but we still don't tell them. For me, it was Kiro at that time. So sometimes we usually have that one person we can trust, but we still, I don't want to tell them. If you know that one person, just telling that one person can get it off your chest. Because if you hold it inside too long, eventually it's going to come out.
Could that be anybody?
And it could be anybody.
Even us old geezers?
It could come out at the wrong time.
Okay.
With me, I was at camp and I broke down crying in front of a bunch of kids, and it was awkward and funny, but awkward.
Okay. So just the last question. I know this is probably your most important question. And how has and how is Jesus impacting your life? You came here not knowing the Lord. You came here with a lot of stuff. And spiritually, what happened and what's going on even today?
Well, the one thing I regret is that my mother didn't get to see me become saved because she died beforehand. So she remembers signing detention slips, suspension slips, and the whole nine. So immediately after I got saved, I didn't want to do drugs anymore. It was a quick, you know, change, which unfortunately everybody doesn't change that quick. But just my thought process changed, and eventually the hoodie came off. Eventually I tried to start trying to talk to people. Sometimes it's a slow process, you know. Then eventually my anger went away. Then eventually I started looking at the world different. Even today, the cool thing about having a relationship with the Lord is that you never stop growing. It's that if you get to a point where you think you arrived, then you're doing something wrong because you never stop growing.
So give us maybe one dream you have that if God would will, you'd like to see fulfilled in your life.
I would like to get to the point where I can eat whatever I want without worrying about finances.
Well, we always got some leftovers for you. So.
Cool.
Amen.
All right. Well, bless you, buddy. Love you.
Thanks.
Particular who fills out about 14 of those prayer request sheets every week, but you can't know what's on there unless you get to know her, is going to share with us. I headlined this thing. I never thought it would end this way. And it's not over yet. But let's welcome Antoinette Battle, if you would, please. She was sick earlier in the week, and God made you well, and we're glad for that. But so she is 39 years old, plus, I don't know, maybe she's 39 years old. But tell everybody how long you've been married and how long you've been a mom.
I'm single. I've never been married. Don't have any children.
Okay. So what are the fondest memories you have when you were a kid of your mother?
Well, my mom was a person who had the gift of hospitality. So a lot of people gathered at our house, you know, when they would come to town, you know, family members and friends. And I can remember her just being that perfect hostess. I got to meet a lot of my great aunts and uncles because of her, you know, who would want to stay at our home. And having just fun times with my relatives who would come to town. And we, you know, were able to bond and just have fun times together.
So what did your family look like when you were a teenager, let's say?
Well, there were six of us. There's four girls and two boys. And I'm the youngest of six. So when we had family gatherings, we had 30 people plus. You know, my mom had, you know, as I was growing up, maybe about 15 grandkids. So all of us gathered at her house.
So what kind of dreams did your mother instill in you? What did you hope to be doing, or maybe how did you let your mind go? What would your life look like when you were 30, 35 years old in your mind?
Well, my mom is one of the hardest working persons or people I know. She is she keeps the house immaculate. She worked hard for her family. She loves her family, so she would do anything for her family. So that kind of gave me a vision of, you know, the type of woman I needed to be, just a hard-working lady.
Okay. Did you sense you're going to have family of your own, or?
I thought I would. I thought I would have been married by now and had kids.
Uh-huh. And you've pursued education. What do you presently do?
I work with kids.
Where at?
Cleveland Heights High School.
Okay, and what are you doing outside of school? How are you having fun?
Well, my mom has blessed me to be around her and take care of her. I guess the roles have reversed. I didn't think it would end up this way, but I believe it's God's assignment for me at this point in my life to take care of her. You know, she took care of all six of us, grandkids and everybody, and I think that's God would have me to, you know, take care of her right now.
Do you ever feel dumped on or bitter?
I wouldn't say bitter. I would say maybe a little angry sometimes, you know, because I don't get the help that I would like to get from family members because I'm right there with her. And here recently in the later years, I've had a situation in my life where some bad people that I live around really kind of mess me up, you know, getting my life off course with, you know, my caregiving roles and anything that I, you know, was involved with. And it kind of threw me off course, but I'm rebounding from that right now.
Okay. So is it hard to dream? Hard to have dreams of what you might want for the rest of your life as you look ahead? Your mother's how old now?
She's 86 years old.
Okay. So chances are she may go to glory before you.
Yes.
Her health is a challenge.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And I'm sure that takes a lot of energy and strength on your part.
Oh, yes.
I've got a younger sister who's doing the same thing with my mom, so I feel you a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to dream? Do you have dreams? Or do you feel like this is my calling the rest of my life?
No, I know that, you know, there'll be a time when, you know, this assignment with her will, you know, end, and I'll be able to do some of the things that I like to do. I like to travel. Getting more involved in ministry. So that'll give me some time to do that.
Okay, so two last questions. Is this a hard day for you? What do you think when you sit here and maybe traditionally we ask the moms to come forward and give them flowers and you sit there and smile, and is it hard?
No, not really.
Okay, why?
Because my mom is a good mom. She's been a good mom for me, and I think she's done the best that she could to raise her family as much to the best of her ability. And I'm thankful that she's still here, that I could, you know, show my love and respect to her and care for her like she would care for us.
So, and last question, what would you say you best give to her, and what does she still give back to you?
I would say basically, as I watched her as years have gone on, you know, even since we've lived together, she has done things like when I wasn't able to, she stepped in and cleaned the house for me and cooked for me or got a repairman to fix something around the house. And that has caused me to, you know, want to give back to her, you know, give some of those services and that love back to her. And I don't think, you know, God would have it any other way.
Okay. Antoinette lives in a very challenging neighborhood. And we've been praying about a move and a job change and just a sense of safety from where she lives. So you can that much join us in prayer for her. And thanks for sharing your heart. Appreciate it. Anything else you want to share? Closing.
Just that, like you said, just continue to pray for me and my family. That the Lord will just continually have his hands upon me and my family, and this, that whatever he wants to do in this situation, that he will do it for his praise and glory. You know, because there's purpose in the pain, and I know that, you know, one day I'll be able to rejoice.
Amen. Maybe soon. All right. Bless you. Well, I could have had probably 25, 30 interviews as I thought about it. Different places, different seasons. And it's amazing. Growing up, it was just an automatic. You walk in, you're your mom, you get a thing. You don't even think about anybody else. You're focused on what you're going to do after church and who you're going to be with. And a lot of people, that's not even in their agenda. And I had to really think about that. Because you can't probably cover everything. I mean, I think this week I won't get into it, but one of the joys of being a pastor is also one of the sorrows. I got hit with four things. We got hit with four major issues just like that. Everything from the joy of a wedding to two accidental deaths and a runaway kid. And it's like, and you realize there's seasons of life that we're all in. And the worst thing to do would be either bitter because of the season you're in, or not, or just shut down and not rejoice with somebody else. The Bible says to rejoice with those who what? Rejoice and weep with those who. And one of the great reasons is because they're both going to be you one day. That you're going to be the one that's going to need somebody rejoicing with you or weeping for you as you walk through a difficult challenge in life. And when you pull away from other people, you're going to miss that yourself. This isn't a pastoral thing, it's a believer thing. And it's part of how we follow the Lord. As we invest in Him and He in us, and then we reach out to others. So I gathered some quick things, and this will just take a minute. This first one is from a Mother's Day sermon 26 years ago. This is a Mother's Day sermon, a pastor writes, "I'm preaching without apology and with appreciation for the time-honored institution, without the benefit of which we wouldn't be here." And that's the simplest thing to say. Without a mom, none of us would be here. So to neglect it completely would be wrong. I often think that we read earlier, one of Jesus' last instructions was, "Behold your mother," talking to John. And it wasn't even John's real mother. But I'm thinking he's ready to go to glory. He's just beaten, whipped, and "Behold your mom." Jesus had a real care for the institution of fatherhood and motherhood. For young people, if you were to take a class at school, how to be a success, a guaranteed success, you might run to sign up for that class. And all you got to do is look at Exodus 20:12, and it says, "Honor your father and your mother." That's not very popular today. There's so much rebellion and turmoil in the home. Sometimes it can't be helped. But you take the posture with God's help to honor your mom or dad or whoever you have. God says, "You will live a long life and I will be with you and honor you." And it's something we've lost today. We are so fixed on the behavior, but the foundation is missing. And all of us have the opportunity to rebuild that foundation. Every Mother's Day sermon I've run across starts with an explanation. This one's no explanation, the pastor wrote. "As ministers, we're reminded not to get too sentimental about motherhood because, for some, motherhood is an accident. I didn't really want it. For some, it's biological motherhood, not possible. I can't bear a child." And too often, people in the church would put down somebody who couldn't have a child. Terrible. Those are the folks that will never come back again. For some, their mothers weren't all that nice. To be honest, my mother was evil. She was mean. And I can empathize with that person. Dads as well. I've come to find out even when my dad was not probably the greatest dad in the world, I had the privilege to talk to him the last 6 months of his life, honestly. And I came to the conclusion, right or wrong, he did the best he knew to do. And a lot of our parents do that, whether they're right or wrong. They can only work out the information they have right here. And if it's not the kind of information I wish they could have, then it's up to me to honor them and maybe get them back to that place. For many here, you're not married, man or woman, so who gives a rip about this day? Let's just get out of here. I got stuff to do. But I want to take a few liberties, if I could, in closing. William Bush's words, he says this, "To become a mother is not so difficult. But on the other hand, being a mother is very difficult." There's no greater ministry, I think, than the pain and agony of a mother pouring into a child, good, bad, or indifferent. Isaiah 49:15 basically makes a comparison between a mother who bears the scars and pain in their hands, their handprints of their child. Dads think we know kids. Man, we don't know kids. We might take care of them out here. But a woman experiences that pain of childhood. We shouldn't be surprised. Genesis 3, that's the curse that women carry because of the fall. That this parenting thing isn't going to be easy. We should understand that so we can encourage one another and not just point fingers and say, you're a bad mommy. It's hard. It's really hard. So with all these qualifications, why do we bother with Mother's Day at all? Because for all its stumbling blocks, pitfalls, and broken dreams, for all the soiled diapers, soiled wallpaper, spoiled plans, we're talking about a beautiful ideal, a natural part of God's creative plan to bring love and caring to light. Because as Antoinette just said, motherhood is a constant demand for the gift of love and caring. Without moms, I wouldn't be here today. But there's another painful letter I'd like to read from a young lady named Amy, who I think says some things very well. A few years ago, I sat across from a woman who told me that she doesn't go to church on Mother's Day anymore. It's too hurtful. She'd been married, numerous miscarries, divorced, and beyond childbearing years. Too many unhealed wounds that we carry. Don't ask moms to stand up. It adds to the guilt and pain to many. Why? Does the mom who miscarried stand up? Does the one whose child ran away stand up? Is a lady who's a single parent and has a baby stand up? Then you start to think, this whole deal is tougher than I was ever thinking. The season's alive. For those who give birth to their first child, we've had many this past year, we celebrate with you. To those who lost a child this past year, we mourn with you. To those in the trenches every day with their little ones, wearing their red badge of courage, we appreciate you. To those through miscarriage and failed adoptions and running away, don't have a child right now and desire one, we sympathize with you. For those who walk the hard path of infertility, the pokes, the prods, the tears, and the disappointments, forgive us for the foolish things that might have been said. For those that desire to foster, mentor, and become spiritual moms to our children, we applaud you. That's why when we do flowers here, that group is included. Those who are not married or even have their own children, but they're investing into others with the most important investment you could ever make. Those with warm and close relationships with your children, we want to celebrate with you and not be jealous. Those who have distant relationship with kids, we stand with you. Those who have lost moms this year, I didn't think you'd be here, stinker, but I'm glad you are. We grieve with you. Those who suffered abuse at the hands of your mom, we hurt with you. Those who are single and long to be married, we honor you as a single person. One is not better than the other. That's God's call and God's business for today. To the step-parent, we walk in your complex steps and honor you. For those waiting for grandkids, I wait with you. For the empty nests that are coming soon, we both grieve and rejoice with you. And it is a topsy-turvy thing. Those pregnant with new life, we can't wait for you. And she concluded, thanks for listening. I have the parts, but not yet the goods. And that's a good place to be. Why celebrate Mom's Day? First, like I said, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Mom. Second, God is sovereign one day at a time. And the quicker I realize that, the more I will learn contentment and joy with my present state of life. I'll learn to rejoice. I'll learn to weep and realize that both are okay. Galatians 4:19, just to share this word real quick. Paul writing, he says, "My dear children, for whom I'm again in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you, how I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I am perplexed about you." And that pains of childbirth means to agonize as the child, Christ is being formed in this child. Nobody agonizes like a mom for her child. Nobody. Why a mom? It's one half of the union that will benefit you and me for a long time when we take seriously the command to honor our father and mother, because it's the first command with a promise. I share with you what Jesus said about his mama to John before he passed away. You can read through the Proverbs, and you can read how a mom's heart is broken when her son or daughter acts the fool. And how that child, the curse falls back on him when he blatantly curses his parent with no sense of respect. We must bring respect back to our life and to our home front. As an adoptive parent who was 50 years old, who adopted 9 kids after 50, she said these words, "We see motherhood not as a stage of life, but a way of life." You never really stop being a mom, though you got to do it differently, or else you're going to get your kids real angry. So some of the insights I just want to leave with you from 66 years on planet Earth. My mom is still alive. To 40 years in ministry, where I've had a chance to be involved with lives all over this city and suburb. East, west, north, south, downtown, rich, not so rich. Number one, experienced moms, reach out to others. Reach out to younger gals. Offer yourself. Listen, I'm too busy. It's the greatest investment you will make apart from your own family. God will refresh you as you refresh others in his time. Current moms, humble yourself and don't be afraid to ask for help. Your peer group is very important. But just trust that some of these old geezers around you might have something to offer to you who's already been down that path, can help you realize this is normal. Don't freak out. This too will pass. Chad had colic for 3 months, and man, I had a new understanding of how child abuse could happen. I can remember one day I come in, 20 hours a day. I said, "Debbie, open the window." Pa-boom! I didn't do it. But I could see if you were a little challenged and stressful, how easy it could happen. Not because you're a bad person, because you're overwhelmed with life. Single gals, learn from living examples around you. Not that you might get married, but you might get married. Go to school right now. 31 years old, God said, go spend time with married people. I said, why in the world would I want to do that? Because I learned more about life from those who had already been down that journey in life. God's will is best for married or single. Passionate choices for the moment can affect your lifelong goals if I just give in to the passion without any sense of instruction or boundary. Those decisions, forgiven, but don't go away. Learn now what is right, what is not right. And why do I honor moms today? Because 1 Thessalonians 2, in closing, gives me this word. Paul writes again, "As apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children." God taught me that verse 38 years ago. That ministry isn't about being the macho man, but part of it is being that gentle, caring mom to the kids I minister to the adults, but also the strong man. They work together. I need both, and so do you. So in a moment, we're going to honor our moms first with flowers. We'll start off with those who, if you can't walk, we'll bring them to you gladly. Then the moms, then those who are serving our young people, and if we have a few left, we might even tickle the tummy of those that are carrying babies right now. Okay? So have a blessed day, whichever season of life you're in. I pray you can be encouraged that God is now through with you, in you, and can use you in a mighty way. If your mom is still alive, humble yourself and make that thing right if it's not so right. And if it's good, don't take it for advantage because you don't know when it might be over. Do your part to honor whatever the season might be. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for